Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon, and I'm here with my colleague Janice Cunning. And we are both here with Kimberly McKenzie. Kimberly is the founder and CEO of The Intersection, a social enterprise focused on candid conversations and meaningful connections. She's an award-winning fundraiser, a certified fundraising executive, an AFP International Master Trainer, and Kimberly helps people create transformative results for their organizations and thrive in their jobs. Kimberly, we're so happy to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I love your podcast. I can't believe I'm actually a guest on it. So thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate having you too. You are a very experienced podcaster yourself. So it's wonderful to be able to collaborate for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to being on Kimberly's podcast in the near
future. Yes.
So more to come on that.
A podcast about podcasting with podcasters. Like, it's just a big, I don't know if it'll ever get published, Janice, but it'll sure be fun to record.
It'll be very meta.
Well, Kimberly, you wrote a wonderful blog for our fundraising leadership website where you tell a story, a very personal story of how you influenced a fundraising program to take a big risk that resulted in really high growth and a really big shift in culture. And tell us a little bit about that story and what you learned from that experience.
Wow. My stepdaughter's playing her trumpet in the basement, so apologies.
This is life now. This is life.
Incredibly authentic recording. Well, thank you. It's a story that I've been waiting to tell for 10 years. I mean, sometimes it takes a while, right? And it's a story that jumps off of a pretty well-known direct mail pack now called the Ruby pack. And I was working with my direct mail consultants, Jen Love and John Lepp from Agents of Good. They suggested I do something completely crazy, and I swore at them and said, there's no way, like, this is, you're asking too much of me to get my organization to go completely off brand, not use the logo, and write a letter from in the voice of a bird. Like, that's nuts. And they said, no, you should try it. And they convinced me, and I had done the back work to create alliances within my organization, because if that idea had come a year earlier, it never would have flown, so to speak.
Yeah. In hummingbird language.
So we talk, I mean, it's a very tactical lesson on doing a great direct mail piece that Jen and John and Tom Ahern have used all around the world. But this part of the story that isn't told is, how did we get to a place where an organization was willing to trust their fundraiser to take a risk? And so that's the story in the article.
Yeah, talk about the need to listen more and to direct less in that process. And I thought that is so interesting.
Well, it when we stop and we think about frustrations of fundraisers, we are often seen as heroes that come in to save the day, right? There's a lot of work that goes into how many organizations say, oh, if we only had a fundraiser, all our problems would go away. And then we have a tendency to come in and act like heroes. And my experience was, and I've seen other fundraisers fall into this trap, is I came into that job with far too much ego, very driven to create change very quickly. And I didn't stop to take the temperature of the room. And I almost lost that job 3 months in as a result.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you shared that part of the story. And like you said, it's a story that took you a while to tell, right? But I think so often we have to grow and like learn from those moments and kind of process them before we're really ready to share. I think it's hard to share those when we're in the midst of it, but it's so important for leaders who've overcome that, like made those mistakes, right? Like, mm-hmm. come in a little bit too hot, mm-hmm. and then to be able to say like this was the impact, and then this is how I actually dialed it back. So I really admire that you're now willing to share that, because I think a lot of leaders are going to learn from that.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're complicated. Human beings are complicated, right? And so there are a couple of things. I mean, I really believe if you name the shame goes away. And when we're not getting the results we need in our work or in our job, or people don't like us and we can't figure out why, that can be a little bit tough to process. But in addition to that, the reason this story took so long is because I didn't see all these pieces coming into play to lead up to how did we do that mail pack. It's taken me a while to work with other organizations and to see, oh, okay, this is how that happens. And to come up with those four steps of, if you really want to influence change, these are the four things that you need to stop it, that work. You don't need to do anything. It's a choice. But these are the four things that have worked, not just for me, but for my clients. And they take time and they take work. And it's not what you might think.
Yeah, I love how you're pointing out that influencing change, it's not making a change. It's sort of right. Like it's a softer approach. It's right. Like influencing change and understanding that it's a process and that it will take time and that there are steps to get there. Because mm-hmm. I think so often, I mean, I speak for myself and, you know, many other people I've talked to here. It's like we get so frustrated. We want the change to happen right now. Like, come on, people, mm-hmm. we need to get this to happen right now. And actually yeah. That kind of forcefulness and abruptness does not create trust.
It does not.
No.
And that's an external constraint, actually, Michelle, because our leadership is asking for that. Our boards are asking for that. The entire system is set up in a way to create friction and failure, actually. Oh, I've never thought of that before. Mm. We should write that down. But it's so true.
It's okay. We're recording, Kimberly.
Oh, right. You can listen back on it.
But it is, you know, I think that we now in this part of our history as human beings, we have this incredible opportunity to really rethink our current systems and processes and ask ourselves, there's a reckoning, right? I think it's mm-hmm. just happening in the world. There's a reckoning where we're going, wait, that doesn't work for us anymore. And now we have an opportunity to really sit back and work on our professional relationships and our private relationships and create a joyful life for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a bit of a tangent from the article.
No, I think it's making me think about what both of you were saying. It's just what I'm noticing is like we can sometimes force change, you know, and it does like it erodes trust. Like it might work in the short term, right? Mm-hmm. But it erodes trust. Yeah. But I also love what you said earlier, Kimberly, is like often the fundraiser, like in an organization, does not actually have the authority to make mm-hmm. things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of that idea of like, there's not that many times as a leader, you might have direct reports where you can sort of say, this is what's happening. But that's not usually who you need to enroll in your ideas to actually make such a big change as what you made, right? In doing this, like you're going to need marketing and communications, like you're going to need finance, you're going to need the senior team. And I think the skill of influencing, like we just, like, where do we learn it, right? We don't really learn it except by trial and error, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you talk about a compelling story as one of your steps to influencing change, Kimberly. And Janice, what that brings up for me is like, we don't learn it, but we experience it through life mm-hmm. and the stories that we can tell. Mm-hmm. And in moments like these, when it is an opportunity to sort of look back and say, wait, have things been working the way we want them to work? How do we reset? We get to tell mm-hmm. that story of why we're choosing a different path. Mm-hmm. or a different strategy. Mm-hmm. And that can be very enrolling.
So there are a couple of things that come to mind for me on that. And I don't know about you, but I often have like six different thoughts going through my head at the same time, and then I lose them all. So I had to write it down. But Janice was talking about power. And it was the late, great Simone Joyeux who first taught me about power dynamics in organizations. And if we can understand where the power is, and I put in the article, it could be the receptionist. Mm-hmm. But who holds power and influence in your organization? And then how can you get them aligned with what it is that you want to do? And I wrote down approval, the approval process. Oh, right, because fundraising is a team sport. I really believe that. I think it's really arrogant. I've heard colleagues say, we don't need anybody else's approval on this. We know what we're doing. Well, if you choose to work in a silo like that, then you're not going to have the kind of cultural change that is required across the board. You will always be operating in a position of emotional conflict. And we can do that. We can say, I know what I'm doing. I'm the expert with this and it's my job. And I've got the budget, so I'm going to plow ahead because this is the right thing to do. Or, you know, another approach is to choose to build alliances and to educate people. And I don't mean educate in a patronizing way. I don't know anything about environmental science or biology. I know a little bit now because I worked in environmental organizations and I was curious. But this idea of you don't need your team's approval to do something, I think is really arrogant and will not create the kind of collaborative environment that abundant organizations operate in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you bring up an example of that in your article when you talk about the organization getting on board where everybody became a fundraiser. So whoever would answer the phone would know the basics of fundraising and be able to engage with the donor rather than, oh, I'm sorry, I have to pass the call on, or that person's not here today. And that's a great example, I think, of what you're talking about here, where you, if you can enroll people in the idea and get sort of buy-in, not by force or by talking people into it, but by aligning everyone into the overall vision and mission of what the most important thing is here, then that can really create some great movement forward.
Absolutely. And that will happen if the people within your organization see you as Mr. Rogers calls as a helper, mm-hmm. right? So if we approach, leaders of fundraising departments are in such a privileged position because we have touch points with the board of directors. We have touch points with the donors. We have touch points with the beneficiaries. We have touch points with the program staff. We have touch points with senior leadership. We have touch points with the volunteers. It's the only position in an organization that has the potential to influence the entire system. And that depends on human relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's through our failures or our mistakes to have the maturity to step back and go, oh, that interaction didn't go the way I hoped. I wish I could rewind there and do that again.
That's why I love coaching, you know, because often I say that to clients, like, if you could go back and do it again, what would you do? Because it's right. Only in claiming what you would do different that you can do it better, you know, the next time, right?
We're all just a hot mess. Like,
exactly.
Oh boy.
So. Yeah. And the other, I you kind of alluded to it earlier, but I love you talked about the distinction. Is it task conflict and emotional conflict? Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Adam Grant talks about it in his book, Think Again. And it was through reading that it was just a light bulb moment for me. And so I'm trying to decide whether to get personal or speak in theory.
Personal.
Really? It's always so much more risky though. but here's the thing. In that case study that I shared, there were two strong women who were not getting along. me and my executive director. And I was like, I wrote about a bull in a china shop being, this is what, and there was a whole bunch of ego and insecurity and every discussion and every conflict felt personal. Mm. And that wasn't working. And that was, and I remember we very clearly, she took a big risk bringing me in. There was no search process. she took a big risk and I took a big risk leaping, and we really wanted it to work out. And so we did have to have a day of reckoning where it was like, holy crap, our relation, like if we don't fix this, nothing mm-hmm. else is going to be successful.
Yes.
And so we had to have that moment. And that's what Adam Grant talks about when you're taking things really personally, it is an emotional conflict. However, and I say this to clients all the time, friction is good. Mm-hmm. You get traction and then you can get momentum and then you see results. So it's okay for us to disagree. This is task conflict, right? You often see it between communications and fundraising departments. But to finish the arc of that particular story, she and I had, we designed an alliance where we're like, okay, we want this to work. How are we going to work together to improve this relationship and model what we want for the rest of the organization? Yeah. And then we did that. We disagreed on multiple times, but we also ended up going on vacation together. We ended up really liking and respecting each other. And we both serve on the same volunteer board of directors now. Yeah. So it's an investment in that relationship, and choosing the emotionally risky path, I think really paid off in that example. And that's the difference between, so she and I, we serve on the same board. We still disagree about all sorts of things, but we do it from a place of mutual respect and curiosity. Convince me, you know, things like, okay, I hadn't seen it that way before. Convince me that your way is better than my way.
Yeah.
I do that with my kids all the time, right? Barbara Coloroso talked about that. Instead of saying no, get them to convince you.
You've got a lot of experience, Kimberly, because you got a lot of kids.
Yes, they're, yes. Just take a drink of water on that one.
Yeah. I love, I use an assessment tool where it's the conflict piece. I like how they describe it as like healthy conflict is that engaging, like mm-hmm. opposition, basically opposing ideas, like debating. And then it becomes unhealthy when it becomes personal, when someone's self-worth is threatened, right? Like I feel like I can't live my values, or I'm not being respected for my strengths. Yeah. And that's the kind of conflict that like really depletes us, you know, absolutely. At work. And I actually think, like, as you were listening, like talking, I was thinking, I haven't really thought about it this way before, but it's like, it's almost like a dynamic. I think I was watching a TV show where this happened the other night. Oh yeah, The Good Doctor. I was watching The Good Doctor this week. Oh. And there's two people who like are flirting, but not getting along, you know, like one of those dynamics. And somebody challenged
him. I love
him,
those like, shows, Janice.
Yes,
I love
yeah,
those
so, shows. Yeah. But it was so funny because one of the other doctors said, you can't listen to her ideas, because he couldn't unpack them from the dynamic that the two of them had, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens sometimes. It's like, if we don't actually do the emotional work to connect with people,
yeah.
they're not willing to listen to their good ideas, you know, because we kind of write off the ideas because we're writing off the person, right? Mm-hmm. We've dehumanized someone. So,
and there's a reason for this work. There's the reason, the problem we can solve by doing this work is staff turnover in the charitable sector. And I think that's the key point, is if we can help people stay in their jobs to do this emotional work, they will, and their organizations will be extremely successful. But if we can't dig into this work of being a messy human and being a feeling person, and figuring out how to be curious about all of the other messy people around us, then we won't stay in our job, and we won't get results, and we won't change the world. So it's really important.
Well, you know? It takes such courage, which you're pointing to. It takes a leap of faith to go into conflict in that way. Mm-hmm. And you just laid out such a perfect example of how being curious about each other is sort of like the catalyst for being able to have that courageous conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? Yes. And I mean, we all are coaches, some, you know, and it takes a lot of work to be able to do that. So I don't know if I would, I think some people may need to access external resources before they dive into those scary conversations. I would never put my 13-year-old behind a car, but we'll ease a 16-year-old into driving, and ultimately they can drive across the country by themselves, you know? So,
yeah.
So
it's a good point. Yeah. And I think there's definitely like the one-on-one, like coaching, but there's also like team engagement, you know, like we certainly do a lot of work about conflict. And like I would say, you know, Michelle uses DISC, I use Strength Employment Inventory, and those tools are often just like a very empowering way for people to understand how they're different in at work, you know, and in their communication styles and their motivations. And that can often be a way to open up that conversation that feels a little bit less threatening, right?
Yeah.
It's not like so much about a one-on-one dynamic. It's more about like, oh, let's be curious about how we're different and what our different strengths are.
And that's what opens the curiosity. It's like, oh, we are different. Isn't that kind of cool? How else are we different? Yeah. How are we the same? You know, then you begin to open up those kind of conversations.
And then, oh, I actually really like you.
Yes. Yeah. I know, isn't that funny?
Or I actually really respect you, but I also fear you. And that's really been impacting our relationship. Yeah. Like, what's that like? Yeah.
But you know, I also loved what you said, Kimberly, like about the reckoning earlier. Like, I think that's the thing, is like, there is a way. I think people are not willing to stay in organizations like that, where it's like, yeah, I'm not being respected. I mean, some people have to, right? I don't want to say that, but I think that one of the great things that's happening is there's much more of a feeling like as a person, like I am going to choose to move on, you know? And it makes me sad sometimes. Like, I think it's great. I run my own business. I love when people run their own business, but I do think it's sad when people feel like they have to become consultants in the nonprofit world, because there's no good organizations to work at, right? That makes me sad. But
it doesn't make you a great consultant either, in all due respect to other consultants.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So I think that's the thing. It's like, we're at a time where people want great leadership, right? And they want to have these kind of healthy organizations to work for. And if organizations don't step up and actually help their staff learn these skills, like learn how to influence, learn how to have positive conflict, then you're right. It's like that same churn of like a year and a half in an organization, and then I'm moving on, is going to keep happening.
Yeah. Okay. So we have been talking about a leadership deficit in the charitable sector for years. The first time I think 2005, 2006, there was a lot of work about a leadership deficit. It's 2021 now. Mm-hmm. So let's look at what it takes to be an effective leader in an organization. And what it takes to be an effective leader today is very different than what it took 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we do need to figure out how to fix this cycle of a 6-month honeymoon period in a new job, 6 months of learning that you're not going to be effective because the system doesn't support what needs to be done, and then 6 months of looking for another job. Because that's not going to serve anybody. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
So, and then when you look at the fact is, it also takes 18 to 24 months to realize a major gift. So if you're so busy trying to find another job or being unhappy in your job, you're not going to be effective building the kind of relationships you need for a successful fundraising program. And I only know this because I've messed it up so much myself. But now I guess I can see that this is a broken system, and there are ways to fix it and to be... this probably doesn't make sense, human forward.
Yeah, well, that's another word. Like, I see that as another word or another way of looking at the positive reinforcement that you actually talk about in the blog too. It's like, notice what people are doing really well. Everything might not be going great,
right?
But having that kind of positive reinforcement to say thank you, to notice, actually has a really big impact on people feeling like, oh, okay, I know I'm doing something right here.
Yeah, I feel safe with you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And creating safety, creating a safe culture, also creates a culture that is willing to take risks.
Right.
Yes. And if you can do that, then maybe your director of communications will be okay with a little test of not putting a logo and putting bird footprints on an envelope. You know, maybe. But I think I wanted something else that's sticking in my mind, though, is this idea of leaning into challenging conversations. And I think one of the things that I've learned through the coactive coaching training is the idea of asking for consent to do that. Mm-hmm. And so if we know that there is going to be what my husband, who is also a management consultant, calls a come to Jesus conversation, a come to Jesus moment, we maybe should get consent from the other person we need to engage with to have that conversation. And then when you do that, then it changes the atmosphere. People don't get defensive or feel attacked. They're like, okay. Yeah. Or they can say, no, I don't have bandwidth. Right. My husband's having an affair and my kid's a drug addict and I don't have the bandwidth for this.
Or that's through a global pandemic.
Through a global pandemic. Right.
No, I think, there's a lot of that right now. Yeah. So let's first of all, if you haven't read it, listeners, if you haven't read it yet, read it, because there's so much, like Michelle said, there's so much to glean from these stories. And I love that you've gone really, really personal, Kimberly, because like you said, it's like you can talk theoretically about these things, but actually telling your own personal story will help a lot of people. And then we'd love to give people something to try. And we know you have something that's a little bit edgy. And maybe a little bit scary that you want to challenge our listeners to do. So tell us what that is.
All right. Well, I would love for people who are listening to this and identifying with the stories that we're sharing, and then they have somebody in their organization that they comes to mind for them. Someone who you may not have a great relationship with and you're faking it until you make it, you know. Maybe be curious about them and book some time to sit down and declare that you're finding the relationship challenging and you'd like to work with them on it. And I suspect people will be surprised by the response to that. It's very disarming. And you can even, they can say, yes, but I need to prepare. They can make an appointment, but to lean into that. And I know that you have a lot of resources that will help with challenging conversations. So maybe you can share a tool.
Yeah, we will share a tip sheet. We have a Creating Healthy Conflict tip sheet that we will share. I'll put the link in the show notes and you can find it on our free resources page on our website, the fundraisingleadership.org website.
Yeah.
And that's a great complement to the exercise that you're challenging our listeners with, Kimberly.
Yeah, I would and love I know, to hear how it goes.
I was just going to say, Kimberly, I know you love networking and you love bringing together the community. So we've linked in the blog to Kimberly. So if people want to reach out to you, you know, on social media, I'm sure a lot of people will want to reach out and kind of share their own stories, I suspect.
I would love to hear them. I would love to hear them. This is a great, I think I just want to end with, we are standing on a platform of possibilities right now. I think we are about to see extraordinary growth across multiple sectors when this world opens up, and it's a wonderful time where we can press the reset button on any challenging relationships that we may be having within our personal, but today we're talking about our professional lives. So I think the future is very bright.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. I still remember our first, I don't know where we went, but you and I went for coffee and we had this super long. I like my favorite kind of conversation. We talked about 16,000 different things. I love. And it's been really nice. I feel like during stay at home, you know, you and I have gotten even closer, and yeah. Michelle and I were thrilled that you've also stepped into training at the same coaching school that we went to. So that now Michelle is, you know, like connected to you since she teaches there. So it's been really nice to build on our relationship. And yeah, thank you so much. Like I said, for really telling a personal story that has so much learning for other leaders. And and I look forward, like we said, who knows what our podcast recording is going to be, but hopefully it'll come to life.
I appreciate you too, Janice. And I remember that meeting, and I remember there was a high top table, and I'm always really uncomfortable on high top.
Me too. I wonder why we sat at a high top.
But I'm really loving this relationship too. And thank you so much for inviting me. It's really been a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So glad to have you, Kimberly. And once the borders open between the US and Canada, maybe we'll meet in person one of these days.
Yeah, we'll get Michelle back. Yeah. But being in Toronto was one of the last in-person things that Michelle did. So yeah. We're keen to have you come back and do it again. So yeah. So to wrap up, the podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. And we'd love it if you subscribe if you haven't already. We're on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review so others can find us. And as Michelle mentioned, we're going to have a link to our free resource of the week, which is the tip sheet around having healthy conflict. So Kimberly's issued a big challenge to reach out to that person at work that, you know, you might have a little bit of a sticky relationship with, and be authentic and try and be curious and redesign the alliance that the two of you have. So we encourage you to go put that into practice.